From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and sound bites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Washington Watch with Tony Perkins starts now.
Let's be very clear about this, because there has been a lot of mischaracterization. She was not in charge of the border. The Homeland Security Department is in charge of the border.
That was Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg on Fox News Sunday, showing how Democrats plan to use George Orwell's memory hole to cover for Vice President Kamala Harris. Welcome to this Monday edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Will the memory hole work? Pollster Scott Rasmussen says her standing in the polls right now is because people don't know her.
Very few voters know anything about Vice President Harris. Over the next 2 or 3 weeks, as people get to know her, her numbers may move up or down. But right now, this is like a blank slate.
Scott Rasmussen joins us later here on Washington Watch. On This Week on the Hill, which airs on the Salem Radio Network, House Speaker Mike Johnson said the House will investigate the lack of arrest of pro-Palestinian protesters last week who defaced government property and burned an American flag.
They also spray-painted and defaced our monuments. They painted Hamas messages and profanity on the public property there, the federal property, and defaced it, desecrated it. It was just outrageous. It enrages us. There was only a dozen or so people arrested, and so now we have House oversight hearings beginning to get a briefing on this, why more people are not being punished. It is not a First Amendment expression to destroy public property.
The announcement from Speaker Johnson came before D.C. prosecutors dropped nearly half of the arrest charges. This, of course, has given rise to more claims of a two-tier justice system. We'll talk with Texas Congressman Pete Sessions in just a moment. And towering over the athletes at the 2024 Summer Olympics in Paris was an offensive opening ceremony that provided a blasphemous portrayal of the Last Supper with drag queens.
And clearly there was never an intention to show disrespect to any religious group. On the contrary, I think that Thomas Jolie really tried to really intend to celebrate community tolerance. If people have taken any offense, we are, of course, really, really sorry.
That was Olympic spokeswoman Anne Decom providing a non-apology apology. The global outrage to the blasphemous portrayal was immediate. Is there more we should take away from this sacrilegious display by the Olympic organizers? David Clawson, director of the Center for Biblical Worldview at the Family Research Council, joins me. A weekend missile attack in northern Israel by Hezbollah that killed a dozen children had diplomatic teams around the country, around the world, scrambling to prevent an all-out war in Lebanon. We'll get the latest from Jerusalem when CBN Middle East Bureau Chief Chris Mitchell joins us later on this edition of Washington Watch. By the way, if you have not yet signed the petition calling upon all presidential candidates to stand with Israel, text the word support to 67742. That's 67742, the word support. By the way, if you've not yet downloaded the Stand Firm app, you'll get those alerts on your phone. So go to the App Store and download the Stand Firm app and stay involved and engaged and informed. The House of Representatives began its summer recess this week, allowing members of Congress to hit the campaign trails back home as the November elections approach. Back in Washington, prosecutors have dropped charges against nearly half of the 25 people arrested during the pro-Hamas riots following Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's address to Congress. Now, President Biden frequently says that no one is above the law, but is that the case when the left riots? Joining me now to discuss this and more, Congressman Pete Sessions. He serves on the House Committee on Oversight and Accountability and the House Financial Services Committee. He represents the 17th Congressional District of Texas. Congressman Sessions, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, thank you very much. What a stunning 10 days since I was last with you.
Yes, a lot happening last week in our nation's capital. You attended the Prime Minister's address to Congress. Unfortunately, it came with a sideshow of violent protests and vandalism in Washington. You know a little bit about this. Your father was the FBI director. The District of Columbia is overseen by the federal prosecutor. Are you concerned that they've dropped half of these charges?
Sure I am, but it's very consistent with what you could expect. You know, and I know that Washington is a work-free drug zone. It's a zone where they do not intend to follow through with the law, and that's the problems that they've got. They have lawlessness in Washington, D.C., and that's why earlier in the year we even turned down their crime bill because of the way they look at this. So it's a real problem for people who would choose to come to Washington or, in the sad case, to look at Washington, the center of our democracy.
Are you concerned, Congressman Sessions, that this just fuels the concern by so many Americans out there that there's a two-tiered system of justice? If you're conservative and you engage in, well, and I certainly don't condone it, but you engage in behavior like we saw on January the 6th, you get one sort of treatment. If you're the left and you're rioting because of a George Floyd incident, or now Benjamin Netanyahu comes to the city, you're treated differently.
Well, I am concerned about it, but we also want to remember that you had, at the very head of this, President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris, who are openly radical in their ideas, even to suggest, as President Biden has taken on, to change the Constitution of the United States of America. These go back to ideas that we remember with Roosevelt, and even Supreme Court Justice in 1928 spoke about this as a problem when Supreme Court Justice said that essentially those people that think these are good ideas, it sounds so good, but in respect, when you look at it, it's dividing our country and changing who we are. And the same things from 1928, 1933 are alive today. You have people in Washington, D.C., who say that they are following the law, and yet what's interesting about what President Biden has done is he would be prosecuted for those things that he did that have now come to light directly to the American people for his activities. And for him to say that he would be for this is really very interesting.
Well, anytime we change something that the founders put in place, it's something that we need to give a lot of thought to. I mean, when you look at the Constitution, it is only the Supreme Court that is laid out in the Constitution. Lower courts are a creation of Congress. But anytime we have tinkered with the Constitution over the years and modified something major, it has had ripple effects upon our republic. And so to propose this on his way out of office suggests that this is a last-ditch effort for the left to grab hold of power.
Well, in fact, it does. And Tony, you and I are really not old enough to remember this, but Frank Johnson was a federal district court judge in Alabama. And he is the impetus behind ruling on the civil rights cases. And he did that knowing he had a lifetime appointment. He did that knowing that he could make tough decisions. My father also served as the chief judge of the Western District of Texas and had to take on many, many hard cases. And while they were all very familiar and good for law enforcement, rule of law, the facts of the case are that judges, it says in the Constitution, are appointed for a lifetime, and that is to allow them to be able to make these decisions without political power. And it's that political influence that the Democratic Party wants to have on judges. Article 3 judges and the Supreme Court would be permanently marred if this were to happen.
Yeah, excellent point. You're absolutely right. The founders, they knew what they were doing. Very contemplative when they came to the structure of our government. Again, it's just something that we change. We should do so very carefully as we approach that. I want to switch gears a little bit to the task force. Last week, as Congress was wrapping up, one of the last things to be done was a task force they passed the legislation to establish a task force to investigate the assassination attempt on former President Trump. What's that going to look like, and when can we expect a report on that?
Well, in fact, it is going to happen. It will be done on a bipartisan basis. Mike Johnson made sure that he did not follow Nancy Pelosi's lead, where she made it all one party, and then those completely agreed with her. It must be bipartisan. We must get to the bottom of it. It will be delivering its results, or at least whatever the results they have at the time, on December, before about the time we leave. But here's the bottom line. Every day we are revealing more and more about this. And the FBI Director Wray is smart to not only bring forth that information when he gets it publicly, but to make sure that what he does is provided to the American people in a format to where it stops people from guessing about what happened. There are thousands of people who have data and information. We do not come out with a straightforward way to look at this. It's a problem. Now, second point, members of Congress are also receiving hundreds of pieces of information that we then keep for ourselves. And so the FBI has to make sure that they really do the right job, because there's a disconnect in what some people think is someone trying to change or alter the facts of the case. I have confidence in the FBI to properly do this, but I will tell you the Secret Service amazingly looks inept and like they have real problems that we have to get through sooner. So I hope that as this information comes out, we are able to help talk about that and shape something between now and the time we have an election.
Yeah, I think it's extremely important, as you pointed out. In fact, I spoke with the speaker about it last week, that you don't want silence or a vacuum of information, because then you get all these conspiracy theories coming out, further dividing the nation. So to your point, I think it's very important that the FBI come forward with that information, and that the Congress has the oversight, the hearings, they do this investigation, and the American people have clarity on exactly what happened.
We'll be deliberate about what we learn, and we will be deliberate about getting to the bottom of this. But I will tell you that we must solve this problem rather quickly. And that's why last week in the hearing that we had with the director of the Secret Service, we were not only unimpressed, but she offered no insight as a 28-year veteran of the department of the service. And that is unconscionable when you have someone that is not able to at least gain insight or point us to how we need to fix things. So I will tell you, we're doing the right thing. Republicans and Democrats both want answers, and we'll get them.
Well, and I think she certainly left that oversight committee meeting a week ago, because with an understanding that folks weren't happy, because the next day is when she resigned. Congressman Pete Sessions, always great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Tony, thank you very much.
All right, folks, stick with us. You know, it's just 99 days until the November elections. 99 days. Pollster Scott Rasmussen joins me after the break with an update on where things stand. We're going to take a look at the numbers. What are they telling us? What might we expect in the weeks ahead? That's coming up next with Scott Rasmussen. Don't go away. We're back with more Washington Watch right after this.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable Word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone, too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, SageCon, to learn more. That's SageCon, SageCon, to learn more.
Hi, I'm Georgina, an intern here at Family Research Council, and I wanted to take a moment to tell you about FRC's incredible internship program. This 3-month program is both a discipleship and a development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. This program features hands-on professional experience here in Washington, D.C., weekly biblical worldview training, tours around the district, opportunities to meet some of the country's most prominent policy experts, and more. The program also includes free housing, a meal stipend, and is available in spring, summer, and fall. If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, as a current intern, I cannot recommend this program enough. For more information or to apply, please go to frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships. Apply today.
Welcome back to Washington Watch, the website, TonyPerkins.com. And by the way, if you've not yet signed the petition of support for Israel, which we will send to all presidential candidates, text the word support to 67742. That's support to 67742, calling upon them to stand with Israel. Yesterday began the final 100 days of the 2024 presidential election. Can you believe it? Well, as the sprint to November picks up pace, the rise of Vice President Kamala Harris as the Democrats' presumptive nominee has brought momentum to her campaign, at least among her base on the left. But with voters are but what voters are saying are their top issues: inflation, the economy, and immigration. How long will this honeymoon phase last? Joining me now to discuss this and more, Scott Rasmussen. He's the president of RMG Research and the editor-at-large of Ballotpedia. Scott, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's always great to be with you, and especially at this time of the election season.
Yeah, it's on us once again. Seems like it just keeps coming back. So let's talk about this. We're in this 100-day period as we march toward the election. Give us your assessment on the state of the race after the events of last week.
Well, I think it's a mistake to say that Vice President Harris has gained a lot of momentum or reshaped the race. A better way to look at it is the numbers we're seeing today are almost identical to the polling numbers we saw on June 26th. That's right before Joe Biden had that disastrous debate. What that means is the popular vote is maybe a toss-up, maybe Trump ahead by a point or two. That means that he's got the advantage in the key swing states. One way that I would describe it is with Biden as the Democratic nominee, the Democrats, well, they were coming to bat in the bottom of the ninth, down by 6 or 7 runs. With Harris as the nominee, they're coming to bat still down, but only by a run or two. So it's possible to see a path forward, but it's not really a new race at this point.
Is this going to be a base turnout election for Democrats? I mean, when you look at the issues that Kamala Harris is focusing on, abortion being, you know, one of her top issues, and of course now they're talking about the court, which is closely linked to the issue of abortion. Is this designed to mobilize and enthuse their base?
Absolutely, it's designed to mobilize their base. One of the challenges that Democrats have had this cycle is younger voters and a lot of more progressive voters just aren't that excited about the Democratic team. So by focusing on those issues, on those hot button base issues, they're looking to get out that vote. And look, 2 years ago, they did a very good job of getting out the vote in certain districts. Now, the challenge is voters tell us the top issue is inflation. The second most important issue are other economic concerns. And number three on the list is immigration. On all of those issues, President Trump is trusted far more than Vice President Harris is today, or than President Biden has been. I think we need to be a little careful about those numbers. Let's see what happens over the next couple of weeks as voters get to know Vice President Harris a little more. But right now, those issues leaning very much against Vice President Harris. And I had to chuckle. There was a newspaper headline in the New York Times saying that some of her past policy positions may not help her in this year's campaign. But that was one of the great understatements. Yes,
I was going to say that is an understatement. But you say don't pay too much attention to the numbers. I agree. But there is one number that I focus on, and it's not the top line numbers, but it's more the intensity number. And when you and I have talked about this before, but for those on the left, and I'm speaking in very general terms, but for those that usually vote on the left for Democrats, they see government differently. They see government as really it is a big deal. It's almost for some becomes religious because that is the way they pursue their values. That's the way they pursue, even when you look at taxes, how they care for the poor and everything else. Where those on the right, especially evangelical voters, see government as something we have to do, but there are things that are a higher priority. Is that intensity level, where is that at present? Is it with the Republicans, Democrats? Is it equal?
Before Vice President Harris became the presumptive nominee, the advantage was clearly on the Republican side. Right now, it appears to have reached a point where both sides have that same degree of passion. But again, one of the things that's very difficult with President Trump in the race is figuring out who is actually going to show up and vote. As you and I have talked lots of times, that's what really matters. And there are people who vote almost all the time who were telling us a month ago they didn't want to vote in a Trump-Biden match. They were unhappy with both sides. So we're going to look and see how those people shift as they get to know Vice President Harris a little bit. Look, I think the reality is Donald Trump brings out people who don't regularly vote, and the more they get to know about Vice President Harris, the more enthusiastic they will be about voting. And on the other side of the aisle, the abortion issue, the Supreme Court, other topics, that will fire up the base on the Democratic Party. I do think the Republicans have the edge at this point, but it is far from over with 100 days to go.
So, Scott, speaking of the court and the issue of the sanctity of human life, when you go back to 2016, 2020, you had then candidate Trump in 2016 put forth a list of candidates, pro-life judges for the court, embracing a party platform that was clearly pro-life. This time backing away from the life issue, not talking so much about the courts. If Biden makes it, or if Harris makes this a primary issue, and Trump doesn't respond to it, how is that going to work out?
Well, he's going to have to respond, and what he has said publicly is he's going to leave it to the states. I think the challenge for the life movement is that for 50 years, the objective was very clear, and that was to overturn Roe v. Wade. And now that that's happened, the movement is still struggling a little bit to find its footing. We live in a nation where overwhelmingly voters say it'd be better if we have fewer abortions. At the same time, they're really uncomfortable with restrictions on the right of a woman to choose, and the movement needs to find a better way to address that issue.
All right. Well, Scott, I'm sure we're going to be talking quite a bit over the next 99 days as we approach that November election.
Look forward to it, Tony.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us. All right. After the break, a blasphemous opening ceremony kicked off the Olympic Games in Paris last Friday. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about not just what happened, but how should we respond? A lot of outrage. But is there more? We're going to talk about it next on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to have you with us on this Monday. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Well, following a blasphemous parody of The Last Supper featuring performers in drag during the opening ceremony of the Olympic Games on Friday, organizers of the Paris Olympics apologized for the derision and mockery of Christianity. But according to Thomas Jolly, the director of the ceremony, the idea was to create a big pagan party in line with the gods of Mount Olympus. Pagan party? Well, Christians around the world are not convinced by the organizers' denial. But how should we be responding to this? Joining me now to discuss this, David Clawson, director of the Center for Biblical Worldview here at the Family Research Council. David, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Great to be with you, Tony.
So organizing an opening ceremony that is not blasphemous should be the easiest job in the world when it comes to the biggest sports event that, so many countries participate in.
Well, I agree, Tony, and I've been watching the Olympic Games, some of my early memories in the 96 Atlantic Games, and, this is an opportunity to be unifying, to celebrate all the good that sport, kind of encourages and inspires us to. And, Tony, watching what we saw with these drag performers, and I hear this so-called apology, but I'm not sure if I buy it. It really is the mainstreaming of moral degeneracy, and really, I think it's appalling.
So, the Olympics, they have no quality control. They just allow anybody to do whatever they want. The apology is one of those non-apologies. If anyone was offended, we apologize. Are they so tone deaf to the Christian faith that they wouldn't see this as being problematic?
I think that might be part of it, Tony. George Barna here at FRC, we've done a lot of worldview polling, and we know that only 6% of Americans have what you could call a biblical worldview. 88% of Americans have a synchronistic worldview. And when you have fewer and fewer people that actually hold a biblical worldview, what that means is that biblical principles, Orthodox Christian teaching, increasingly, it won't just seem odd or a little outdated or a little weird, it increasingly seems subversive and dangerous and perhaps something that's appropriate to ridicule. And so the fact that we do have low levels of biblical literacy, I think it's quite possible that that might be a rationale. Although I do think, Tony, that some of this very edgy entertainment was intentional, as far as even in the torch relay before the opening ceremonies, there in Paris, they had three people dressed in drag. And so there's a clear moral agenda that I think the organizers were purposely trying to advance.
All right, David Coulson, I want to step back from the overt political, the messages being sent, and I want to look at this from a spiritual standpoint. At our Center for Biblical Worldview, that's what we try to dissect the things that are happening around us from that biblical perspective. When you look in the Old Testament, when God was mocked, when his name was subject to reproach, and that's what this was. This wasn't about Christians. It's about God, about mm-hmm. Jesus Christ. It usually would follow the compromise of God's people. And when you look back to when the Olympics, I think it was in 396 or so, the Roman emperor canceled the Olympics because they saw it as a pagan religion, and he was Christian. That was in when Rome was Christianized, mm-hmm. and it didn't start back until the late 1800s. And of course, it is a big pagan celebration. However, is this in-your-face reproach of Christianity, mockery of Christ, the result of a church that has been morally and spiritually compromised?
I think that's definitely part of it, Tony, that for far too long, and usually when I'm thinking about it, this is in the context of elections and some of the social conservative issues, I think for far too long, a lot of Christian leaders and just people in the pews have been okay with kind of seeing church and seeing their faith as a Sunday morning activity, but not something that should define their identity that they take with them 24/7. All you know, that's part of their core identity. I will say, Tony, I think as Christians think about this, you know, we shouldn't be surprised. Jesus did warn us of this, a passage mm-hmm. that I was thinking about right before coming on, Tony, John 15 and 16. I think any Christian who's kind of paying attention to this controversy, who's offended about it, and we should rightly be offended by this, but I don't think we should be surprised. Jesus said, in the same way they persecuted me, they will persecute you. They came after me, they'll come after you. And so John 15, 16, I think, is helpful Bible reading for anyone who's right. really wanting to think through this kind of completely.
I would also include in that, David, is when we see these things, instead of our immediate response being outrage, and it is outrageous, but should be introspective first and asking the question, Lord, have we opened through our conduct as the church opened it up to this attack? Now, I agree with you 100%. We know that these demonic, and this is what it is, demonic, these individuals, you know, they're playing out really as puppets on a string for the demonic forces that are mocking Christ, that are advancing this LGBTQ agenda. But I think more than anger, we need to be talking about repentance and making sure there's nothing within the context of the church that would open the door up for this mockery of the Lord Jesus Christ. David Coulson, we're out of time. I want to thank you for joining us. As always, appreciate it.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, folks. I do think we need to respond to these situations prayerfully and not necessarily immediately be out there on the social media with some kind of outrageous statement of anger. But what is the message? And I think it's a combination, as David was saying. All right, don't go away. When we come back, Chris Mitchell, the Middle East Bureau Chief for CBN, joins us. Don't go away.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation. bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
This is Washington Watch, and I'm your host, Tony Perkins. If you've not yet downloaded the Stand Firm app, I encourage you to do so. Go to the App Store and download the Stand Firm app. Not only can you watch and listen to Washington Watch each day, but you can also get the daily devotional Stand on the Word, and you can get the Washington Stand news feed right there on your smartphone or your iPad, whatever it might be. Go to the App Store, download the Stand Firm app. Our word for today comes from Psalm 86, where we find the roadmap to the abundant life. Teach me your way, O Lord. I will walk in your truth. Unite my heart to fear your name. I will praise you, O Lord my God, with all my heart, and I will glorify your name forevermore. For great is your mercy toward me, and you have delivered my soul from the depths of Sheol. This is why I believe David was called a man after God's own heart. He had a humble, teachable spirit. He wanted to know God's truth, walk in it, and be strengthened by a reverence for God. This is a prayer that God will honor. Teach me your way. I will walk in your truth. Jesus said that I am the way, the truth, and the life, and no man comes to the Father but by me. If we follow him, we will follow and find the abundant life. Strengthen my heart to fear or revere you, to honor you, to put you first in my life, and to yield my will to your will. That is a prayer that God will answer. To find out more about our journey through the Bible, text Bible to 67742. Tensions remain high in northern Israel today following a rocket strike in the Golan Heights that killed 12 children and teenagers on Saturday. Israeli intelligence has said that Hezbollah launched the attack, and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has pledged a severe response. And those words recently have been backed up by action. So what escalation can we expect in northern Israel in the coming days? Joining me from Jerusalem with an update is CBN Middle East Bureau Chief Chris Mitchell. Chris, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Great to be with you again, Tony.
Now, I know diplomatic teams from the United States and elsewhere were scrambling over the weekend to try to prevent an escalation and potentially another war in Lebanon. Hezbollah initially denied responsibility for the missile strike, but both U.S. and Israeli intelligence attribute the strike to that terrorist group. What's the latest on this coming from Israel?
Well, Tony, I think right now a lot of people are waiting to see what kind of Israeli response there'll be. Some people anticipated something actually this morning in Jerusalem, but nothing yet in terms of a direct response to what happened on Saturday. Earlier today, I was talking to retired Major General Yaakov Amidror, who used to be one of the national security advisors to one of the prime ministers here in Israel. He was saying it's going to be telling exactly what Israel's going to do and what kind of targets they will strike there in South Lebanon. And that will determine, he believes, whether Israel wants to certainly respond to this tragedy on Saturday, or if they want to sort of keep the situation up there from breaking out into a major war. Another set of bank targets, as he says, would actually indicate that Israel wants to go to a major war. My sense, Tony, is that both Israel and Hezbollah probably want a limited war right now. However, we do have reports that that Hezbollah is actually moving some of its precision-guided missiles into position so that they might respond to the Israeli response. And so this is certainly not a science, Tony. So a miscalculation on either side, certainly like what happened by Hezbollah on Saturday, could lead to that major war that many people have been expecting for probably many, many months.
Well, Chris, the words of the prime minister saying a response are not hollow words when we saw what happened with the Houthis just recently, right, with the attack on Tel Aviv. So, you know, you kick me and I'm going to pound you is the message that is really what we've seen from the prime minister.
Exactly. And that strike against the Houthis was devastating to that port in Yemen that was actually a fuel depot. Was actually a port that Iran had been sending weapons to the Houthis, and that was a major strike. So perhaps something on that order is going to happen in South Lebanon, maybe against precision-guided missiles, perhaps against what Hezbollah has been doing in Beirut. They've been hiding weapons near the airport, in the city itself, and whether or not Israel will actually go and strike some of those targets and targets in the Barka Valley as well. You know, for Lebanon and the Lebanese, Tony, it's really a hard place for them to be in. Hezbollah is really the power there in the country. It's a failed state, and the political echelon really doesn't have the kind of wherewithal to really stand up against Hezbollah, who has been really undermining and taking over that country for many, many years. So the Lebanese, in particular, are kind of dreading the potential of actually a wider war that would really be could be catastrophic for the Lebanese people.
Chris Mitchell, the prime minister for months has been talking about once the situation in Rafah with Hamas is finished and they've eliminated the Hamas battalions that remained, that the tension would turn to the north. That's no secret. Could this be the moment?
It could be the moment, Tony. We don't know for certainly. We don't know when Israel's going to respond. And as I was talking to General Amidror, he said that they're really in no hurry. They don't have to respond immediately. They can take their time. They can prepare not only for the response, but for the anticipated retaliation by Hezbollah. So we don't know the timing right now, but this could be that spark that has been anticipated for many, many months, like, as you said, Netanyahu said, and many people have been anticipating once the war in against Hamas in Gaza winds down, then Israel will turn its attention to the north. There's other thinking, Tony, that it might be better for Israel to have this war with Hezbollah in the springtime. Their military people have told me it's better to fight in the spring than the winter. The IDF would be more rested. And what happens on November is going to be very crucial here as well. Who's going to win the election and whether a Biden administration, or I should say Harris administration rather than a Trump administration, may actually put more clamps on Israel. But a Trump administration certainly would have a whole different effect there. So there's a number of scenarios and factors that Israel has to weigh when it's really going to attack its biggest nemesis right now, at least on its border, which would be Hezbollah, but also backed by their even greater enemy, Iran.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that, Chris Mitchell, because the missile was an Iranian missile that killed these children. Is there some thought that this could also trigger greater participation with Iran, because that threshold has already been crossed where they directly attacked Israel just a month and a half ago? Are they preparing for possibly something like that again if they go into Lebanon?
That is a likely possibility if and when they go in a major way with Hezbollah. And it remains to be seen if a major war breaks out between Israel and Hezbollah, will Iran respond directly against Israel, as it did, as you mentioned, on April 13th, the evening, 350 projectiles were fired by Iran directly against Israel. And so that scenario could, and that's why many of these diplomats from the United States to France and others were sort of trying to clamp down and restrain Israel from responding. So that their sense concern is that it would lead to a wider Mideast war. On the one hand, Israel feels like it has had to take care of Hamas on its southern border, has to take care eventually of Hezbollah on its northern border. And really, it also seems for many over here just a matter of time before it has to deal with a potential nuclear Iran that right now is maybe a few weeks away from getting nuclear material.
Yeah, in his speech, I'm actually pulling up the prime minister's speech where he made reference to Iran and their nuclear capabilities, saying that, you know, they would deal with the situation. He said when Israel acts to prevent Iran from developing nuclear weapons that could destroy Israel and threaten every American city, every city that you come from, we're not only protecting ourselves, we're protecting you. That, you know, reading something into that, but it suggests that they're prepared to take action.
I think they have to be, and I'm pretty sure they are, Tony, although you or I don't know the operational plans, but this has been a consideration for decades that they really do need to take care of Iran once and for all. Cannot let them get to a nuclear device. It would be a game changer here in the region. And just like the prime minister said, that it not only threatens Israel, but it threatens the United States and the West. And that's a theme that I've been hearing over and over and here, Tony. The latest person I talked to was a lady named Sarit Zahavi. She's from the ALMA Research Center up on the northern border. She's an expert on Hezbollah. And I asked her, I said, What do Americans need to know? And he says, this is not just our war, it's your war too. And that's the sense I get over and over, that, you know, Israel may be on the front lines, but as Iran says, you know, first the little Satan Israel, but then the great Satan, the United States. And so this is the United States, America's war as well as Israel's.
Wednesday, when the prime minister spoke to a joint session of Congress, I was there, listened to a speech. I actually met with him before and spoke to him briefly after. The following day, he met with President Biden and the Vice President Harris. Of course, all the attention now shifting to Harris because she is going to be the Democratic nominee for president. She, again, continuing, but even more forcefully, the Biden line of bring this war to a close and bring the hostages home. What's the sense there in Israel? when it comes to, you know, we've talked about this because I'm trying to gauge the temperature of the sense of do the Israelis feel like they're alone? Do they feel like America is with them? Because that could determine how quickly they act.
Well, I would think, for one, based on the history of President Trump when he was president from 2016 to 2020 and what he did for Israel, that he would be much more supportive. I think there's concern here among some that the Biden administration for months has been putting clamps and trying to micromanage the war between Hamas and Israel. And as you said, the speech by Kamala Harris was actually even more forceful than the Biden administration. I think some people were concerned of what she didn't say in that speech. And one of the things she didn't say was a condemnation of Hamas. She didn't come against Hamas, but it was actually against Israel. So I think there's a concern by some that that a potential Harris administration would even be more forcefully put pressure on Israel in as it fights its enemies. And some people have been wondering, how would the United States respond to either what happened on October 7th right. or Hezbollah right. firing thousands of rockets into, one of the states from Mexico right. to Texas or Canada to New York.
Well, and we wouldn't be going elsewhere to get permission to respond to the attack upon us, nor would we tolerate someone telling us to throttle back. And this is, I think, an issue that many have with the Biden administration essentially wanting Israel and the prime minister to get permission to protect their own people. And I don't know, is it being interpreted that way there in Israel?
Certainly by some, that it really we have to fight by their rules, not the rules of the Middle East. And you heard in that speech as well what Benjamin Netanyahu quoted John Spencer, the military historian at West Point, that said the combatant to civilian casualty rate is the lowest in history. And the way that the IDF, there's certainly a lot of suffering going on in the Gaza Strip, and people have died. But Israel right. is fighting a war with rules that no other army has done to try to limit civilian casualties. So certainly there's a concern here that the Biden administration has been putting too much pressure on Israel's fight against Hamas, Hezbollah, and even Iran.
And not to mention, Chris Mitchell, that Israel didn't start this conflict, this war. Final question for you, Chris Mitchell. We're up against the end of the program. How can Christians here in the United States be praying for Israel and the Jewish people?
Well, certainly, as it says in Psalm 122, verse 6, pray for the peace of Jerusalem. As it says in the book of Timothy, pray for wisdom for the leaders right now here. They have momentous decisions to make. Life and death decisions, war and peace decisions. They need God's wisdom to know exactly how to respond and what to do, and that they could be unchecked from any undue pressure from whatever nation would try to do that, the United States or any other country.
And that is exactly what we will encourage people to do. Chris Mitchell, always great to see you. Thanks so much for staying up and visiting with us today.
Great to be with you, Tony.
All right, Chris Mitchell with CBN News in Jerusalem. Also, folks, text the word support to 67742. That's support to 67742. And sign the petition to both political parties to stand with Israel. Again, text the word support to 67742 and add your name to that. We must stand with Israel. Out of time for today, but I want to thank you for joining us. And until next time, I leave you once again with the encouraging words the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you could do, and you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.